stapled, I see. The staple is on the left, bottom right, instead of where it belongs.
The copier doesn't speak Hebrew.
Well, obviously I misfed it the wrong. I fed it the wrong way. So today's introduction, we will focus on one of my great rabbinic heroes of all time. A person who has influenced my life and the life of many, many people since, and he's a prodigious figure who looms large in all of Jewish learning. And his name is Rav Moshe Ben Nachman, colloquially known as the Ramban, Nachmanides. Now the Ramban was born in 1194, and his Spanish name was Bonastrag da Porta. I don't actually, I think we're all out. So I don't know what his friends called him, but we're going to call him the Ramban. He lived in Girona. He was born in Girona. He lived much of his life in Girona, which is in Catalonia. So if you look, skip the first page for a second and just look at the second page for the map. Okay, this is just like if you map quest today, if you were trying to trace the footsteps of the Chachmei Sfarad in the second half of the 13th century. So these are some of the important places. In the top right is number one. That's Girona. That's in Catalonia. That's where the Ramban lived. Now, just north of that, if you see, it's cut off a little bit. There's Perpignan. That is now in the southern crust of France, in an area of France known as Provence. So this is important because the Provençal Rishonim, living in the second half of the 13th century, they had their own way of studying. They had many of their own traditions, many of their own minhagim. So they're not necessarily the same group as the Sephardic tradition, as we'll talk about in a little bit, and they're not the same as the Ashkenazic tradition or even as Tsarfas. Tsarfas today we colloquially translate as France. But in rabbinic literature, Tsarfas means northern France. Does not include Provence, which is in the southern area like Narbonne and Perpignan. Now, I would be remiss if I did not mention that I am deeply indebted to a teacher who probably doesn't know my name and he doesn't remember that I was in his class. But there was one time that Yeshiva College, I was in Azraeli in the graduate school for education, but they signed me in for some reason, after some begging and pleading, to a class of a professor, Dr. Chaim Soloveitchik, which was the experience of a lifetime. And we studied the introduction to the Rishonim, and it was one of the most meaningful educational experiences I had in my life, and it has influenced how I understand Gemaras and Rishonim and just put the context, so much of the context that I had never been taught before then. So much of what we're going to share today are pirei pirurim, small scraps from what we have from it's being recorded, but everybody knows we call him Dr. Grach. That's what Rabbi Engel also had him, and he taught us the sugya of Mayim Rishonim, washing your hands. And the methodology was you take one sugya and you see it through all the Rishonim, and how they interact with each other, and how they meet. And part of the reason that this is so interesting to me is because we study this all day in the Kol. We're learning Gemara all the time, and you could put the historical context of how these people figured in. And the first new Rishon that I had ever met in his class was the Tosas, known as the Tosas Re Sir Leon, also known as the Tosas Rebbe Yehuda HaChassid. It happens to be the Kol's learning Brachos this year. So the Tosas Re Sir Leon is an uncommon Tosfist that appears in a sefer called Chut HaMishulash. This is TMI, too much information, but it just gives you the background. So this year I shared with the fellows the first time. This was the first Rishon that he introduced us to. So I come into class, I thought, you know, I've been learning Gemara for 5-6 years, I probably knew a few things. I realized they didn't know anything, in very short order. And so this year we're learning the famous Tosfos Re Sir Leon that I was introduced to by Dr. Grach. So, Zachor LaTov. And he's now publishing some of his essays. He's a very unique personality, let's just say that. You didn't want to get called on in that class. You did not want to get called on.
That's the son of the Rav?
Yes, that's Rav Soloveitchik's son. So the key is don't make eye contact. If you don't want to get called on, do not make eye contact. Anyway, so here's the Ramban. He's born in 1194 in Girona, and he has two teachers. And these teachers are going to be very important because they're going to put together the two worlds. The Ramban is a man at a crossroads of two worlds that transforms the study of Torah. So let's go back for a second. Let's talk a little bit about the history of Spain and the whole peninsula. This area had been, since the previous, let's say, the Ramban, born 1194, the previous 500-600 years had been thoroughly Muslim. The introduction of Jews to Sfarad, to Spain, is very, very old. There's a story of the four captives. There's some kind of legend that there were four captives who were redeemed in different areas, one in Egypt, one in Morocco, different places in the world of Sfarad. And now you're talking a significantly growing Jewish and rabbinic scholarship population under Muslim rule. So the Muslims are coming from the south, from North Africa, and they are taking hold of the peninsula. But above, as we mentioned, just north of Spain is France. France is the eldest daughter of the church, staunchly Christian. So over time, there's a little bit of seesaw going on. Is this area, is this Muslim or is it Christian? So it begins as being predominantly Muslim through the 10th, 11th, and into the 12th century. But then as you're getting into the 11th and 12th century, there becomes a conquest from the north moving to the south of Christian Spain. Now, that's going to have Tisha B'Av connotations. That's not for today's discussion, but to think, if you want to think about, you talk about the golden age of Muslim Spain. Golden age of Muslim Spain, it was because it was pre-conquest of the Christians. What we like to think about in terms of the difficulties that Jews had in Spain, it was primarily from the Christians, although even in the 12th century, there was a sect, a wild extremist sect of Muslims called the Almohads, who were persecuting Jews in Muslim Spain, including the family of the Rambam, who had to leave Cordova, which is not on the map. Oh, it is on the map, just near Seville at the bottom. So that's going to be further in the heart of Muslim Spain, the southern edge. So that's just in terms of the general background that's going to be relevant for other things. But in terms of the scholarship background, so you have here, living in Spain, a tradition of several hundred years of major rabbinic figures. And we don't have the time to talk about all of them, but I gave you a little sketch on the first pages from an excellent book called The Rishonim by Art Scroll. An excellent, handy reference where they go through over the course of the centuries. You see this on the top section on the top left, in the section under Sephardic lands, Rabbi Nachum ibn Saruk and Donash ibn Labrat. So these are two outstanding grammarians that are quoted by Rashi very often in his commentary on Chumash. The next one, Rav Hushiel, he is traditionally referred to as one of the four captives, one of the four men who had been traveling from the yeshivas in Baghdad, who was ransomed from pirates, and he established his yeshiva in Sfarad. And that was the growth of then further scholars. If you look in the next century, now you have quite a bit. You have Rav Shmuel Hanoi, some of the more famous names. Toward the bottom, Reb Yitzchak Alfasi, the Rif, and Reb Yitzchak Ibn Gias, known as the Ritz Geis. So these are very, very prominent Sephardic Rishonim in terms of the world of Halacha, as well as the world of Piyut and Pirush in terms of the Gemara, in terms of the Chumash. 12th century, here you have the Rimi Gash, who is the Rebbe of the father of the Rambam. I'm going a little quickly, but we don't have time for everything. Ibn Ezra, and then the Rambam. The Rambam, 1135, born in Cordova, dies in 1204. So this is the Sephardic tradition. The Sephardic tradition is very well documented. They have a particular approach to their learning. They are introducing this notion of codification. The Rif, Rabbi Yitzchak Alfasi, truncates all of the Talmud to the bottom line. And then he introduces his what he calls the halachos. And then the Rambam has a further classification, even though the Rambam writes that when he's in Egypt, but the concept is there. That's going on down in Sfarad. So if we imagine we had a map, so let's imagine this is the map right here. So this is our map. This is us in America, somewhere over here. We're back here. This is France. This is Spain. This is North Africa. So the Rambam, he actually leaves. He goes from Cordova to Fez, to Morocco, which is strange because the Almohads were headquartered in Fez, so it's not clear why he went there. Then he goes from there, goes to Israel, leaves the scene. But here, in Sfarad, you have this tremendous halachic creativity, and it's being fed by a culture of acceptance and tolerance by the local Muslims.
Up here in France, you're having a whole different experience. And there's a significant cutoff point. There wasn't any, virtually I should say, any interaction between what's going on down here in Spain and what's going on up here in Sorfas. There's a little bit of interaction just here on the edge, because if you have Spain here, France here, and Provence here at the southern edge of France, so there's a little bit of Provençal scholarship that's getting done, and we'll talk about it in a little bit. But up here, you have a whole nother world, and that's on the right side of the chart. So we're familiar with Rabbeinu Gershom, the great scholar of the Rhine Valley, Rabbeinu Gershom Or HaGola, made several important takanos, like you can't divorce your wife against her will, you can't take more than one wife, you can't open somebody else's email, you can't, all kinds of things that you can't do to maintain the certain social norms. This is in Germany, which is right about here. Then he has a student, and several. They have several students, one in particular known as Rashi. Very important figure, 1040, dies in 1101. Rashi's back in France in Troyes. So by the time, Rashi's now in the, I know I'm going a little fast, but we have to cover it all literally on one foot. So Rashi's here in the 11th century. By the time Rahman al-Islam, the Crusaders come in and smash the whole Jewish life in the Rhine Valley, and then it's destroyed again by the Rindfleisch Massacre of 1298, primarily, as Dr. Soloveitchik points out in a published article, that the halacha, the center of halacha creativity had moved, had shifted to France. So whereas there was terrible destruction, lo aleinu, we mourn on Tisha B'Av, in terms of halacha creativity, Rashi and his Beis HaMedrash is in France, and they're largely unaffected by the Crusades, even though the Crusaders came from France. So Rashi's here, he has a grandson, his name is Rabbi Yitzchak ben Meir, Rabbi Yaakov ben Meir is known as the Rabbeinu Tam. Tam because his name is Yaakov. And he creates a whole whirlwind in terms of halachic study, because he looks at the Talmud in a very different way than anybody had ever looked at it before him. He looks at the Talmud as one integrated corpus and tries to resolve potential tensions between competing passages. And this dialectical movement had not been employed, generally speaking, in other places. And this spawns a whole school of halakhic creativity, the students of the Rabbeinu Tam. Now, why is this all important? Because the Ramban had two teachers. One was named was the Rebbe Ben Yakar, Rabbi Yitzchak, I think his name is Yitzchak Ben Yakar, and the other one was Rav Nosson Ben Meir of Trinquetai. Now, the first one, the Rebbe Ben Yakar, was a student of the Tosafists. And the other was Rav Nosson Ben Meir of Trinquetai. Trinquetai is a tiny Provençal hamlet. But what that meant was that whereas until this point, the world of Svarad had been closed from the world of Ashkenaz and Sarfas, now there becomes an integration. Now there becomes a synthesis. And if you're studying in the Beis Medrash of the Ramban, you're not looking at things just from the vantage point of the traditions of Chachmei Sfarad, like the Rambam and the Rif and the Rimi Gash and the Rinzkes, all these figures. You're also incorporating the practice and methodology of what's happening in the Beis Medrash of the Tosafists and in Provence, the practice of Provence. So you have a whole Ma'apecha, and that's where the Ramban is living. He's living at that point, that juncture in history. So the Ramban is a very important figure. So the Ramban then has students. Those students of the Ramban, they are transformed by this space measure. So the later commentaries on the Talmud, like his student Rashba Rav Shlomo Ben Aderet of Barcelona, these you will find many, many parallels in the teachings of the Ramban through the Rashba, and you follow it and you see what did they take and what did they leave out. But until the Ramban, no one had access to the style or to the Torah of the Tosafists. So the learning was very different. The Ramban changed the future of all the learning. And then he himself has quite a few students. So I made this special homemade device. Now maybe you can't read all the names. Maybe. My father-in-law is an eye doctor, so this would be good for his office to try to figure out. So, as you can see, this is a homemade geschäft, as you say. So this comes from, there is a book, it's like a 10-volume encyclopedia of Chachamim called Eight Sfarim. I think it was published in the 50s and 60s. Very hard to get, so I don't have it. But with Otzar Chachma, you can get different pieces, you can get the pages online. So what I did was, I just printed a bunch of pages and then cut them out and fit them together, just to give you a sense of how this Chachmei Sfarad works. So this is the Ramban right here. He had a first cousin, I think it was his mother, whose brother's name was Avram, whose son was Rabbeinu Yonah. Rabbeinu Yonah was a well-known pietist. He authored a very important book on tshuva called Shari Tshuva, that in yeshivas classically they study Shari Tshuva during Elul. I happen to be in Telos during Elul. They have a special Seder. They generally learn Basil Sisharim. Some people learn Shari Tshuva before, like 20 minutes before Maariv. So the Ramban is right here. These lines represent teachers and students. So down here, this is 1240, right kind of smack in the middle of the Ramban's life. He dies around 1270. He has several important students who, if they themselves are going to have more and more students, this is just the world of Sephardic scholarship. So you go back here, you can trace his teachers. One of them is Rav Shmuel, the author of the Sefer HaTrumos, which is an important work on Foshim Mishpat, not for today. But then in terms of his students, so one of them, as we mentioned before, Rav Shmuel ben Aderet, the Rashba of Barcelona. So this particular figure is going to be very, very important, because he's going to write thousands and many thousands of responsa, which we still have today. You can get a copy of them without great difficulty. And they're going to be the bedrock of many, many Piskei Halacha and Tshuvas. If you have a Tshuva from the Rashba, so that's going to be a very important source. Much of his teaching is drawn from the Ramban. This is the Ra'ah, Rav Aaron Halevi. Now, the Ra'ah, Rav Aaron Halevi, is an important figure, perhaps because he may have authored what's known as the Sefer HaChinuch, although there's a lot of controversy. It's an anonymous work. Some attribute it to Rav Aaron Halevi, although others disagree. But the Ra'ah had an important student, whose name is Rav Yom Tov al-Savili, Rav Yom Tov of Seville. So if you look back on the map, you'll see it's kind of more down, it's near Cordova, although he became later a Rav in Zaragoza, which is also on your map. The Ritva, this is a very important commentary on the Talmud. The Ritva happens to be my favorite commentary. It's very, very smooth reading, very clear. But what will you find in the Ritva? You will find the teachings of the Ramban distilled in a very clear, concise way. So it includes the teachings of Sfarad, as well as the methodology of Ashkenaz. And you can see how they dealt with the questions that existed before from the world of France. And then you see here, Rabbi Asher ben Yechiel, who's a whole other story. But then the next generation are very important, not so much commentaries, but responsa literature, which would be the Rivosh, Rabbi Yitzchak ben Sheshes, also very important. He's quoted a lot in Ashkenazi world as well as the Rashbats, Rabbi Shimon ben Semach of Duran. He had a son who was also important. And then the Ran, which is a commentary on the side. So this just gives you a sense of how vast and how important the world of the scholarship of Chachmei Sfarad was at the time. But you see what an important link the Ramban plays in the development, further development of the Chachmei Sfarad. But not just because he had many students and those students were influential. It's because the Torah that he taught was unique to the world of Sfarad, so that it opened things up in a different way. That was perhaps the Chiddush of the Ramban. Yeah.
Was the life of the general Jew, the rank and file, general person, who lived in the Provence and who lived in France and who lived in South Spain, was it that different in general, their cultural, everyday, practical life, that these people brought such different viewpoints to the interpretation of the Talmudic questions, like a Jerusalem mentality and a Tel Aviv mentality in our day, or Los Angeles and New York?
So you're asking a good question. I think the question has two parts. One part of the question is, what was the life of the average Jew in these different cultures, and how does it interplay with halacha? So that's an important question, and Dr. Soloveitchik spends, I would say, the bulk of his career dealing with that question in terms of looking at different halachas and how they play out in different circumstances. So I'll give an example. In Ashkenazi, in like French Jewish communities, so they had to contend with the Crusades. So there were many different reactions to the Crusades. There were many Jews who were baptized, Rachmana Litzlan, because of the coercion. But the vast majority of Jews were not baptized. You had a different circumstance in Spain where they had to be faced with the expulsion and Inquisition, and in that case...
But that was later.
It was much later. But look at the same circumstance where they're forced with this persecution, and in Spain, many, many, many more people did convert. Hundreds of thousands of Jews did convert. Now, why that is a good sociological question, and it's a historical and halakhic question, but that's a good example of where you take a similar kind of scenario, you know, death or convert. In Ashkenaz, you have one oversimplified result, and in Sephard, you have different. The second thing is, did the rank and file notice the difference? So the answer is no, but yes. No, because they're not studying in the academy, so they're not exposed to the discussions that are happening here. But yes, because if you were, and you see this in thousands and thousands of questions, that your everyday person will send a question to their local rabbi, who's, let's say, the Rashba or the Ritva. They both have responsa literature that we still have today, although the Rashba's is much, much more extensive. So he has thousands of queries. Well, his answer is going to be very different than the answer that would have been given had he not been a student of the Ramban, had he not been exposed to these ideas, had he not been a student of the methodology of the Chachmei Tosfos. Just like every responsa is framed by the teachings that informs it. So this is kind of the long and the short of the life of the Ramban in terms of the intellectual history. We'll take a look at this special art project later. The Ramban, I still remember Dr. Soloveitchik pointed out, the Ramban wasn't your average commentator in the sense that his style of writing is very challenging. You open up a commentary on the Ramban, on the Talmud, and you find it's very, very difficult. And he suggested, and the reason may be, that the Ramban was really a poet. The Ramban wrote a lot of poetry. He wrote songs, and this is the most prolific edition of the Ramban. Some people are familiar. Simi Chevelle's grandfather, Rabbi Dr. Chaim Dov Chevelle. So he published, this is the two volumes of Ramban on Chumash. He also published two volumes of Kisvei HaRamban, Writings of the Ramban, which include letters, many poems, and some drushes, as well as his halachic work. So the Ramban was a very, very ambitious scholar in terms of his written scholarship, but perhaps part of the challenge in deconstructing some of the Ramban's language is because at heart he wrote with a heavy, heavy poetic bent. That's why if you open up any page in the Ramban's commentary, you will see in the Chevelle edition, this is the edition, you'll see the commentary on the top, he has notes on the bottom, but then he has tons of cross-references. These tiny letters here are cross-references. Because what the Ramban will do is he will write with verses that he just plugs in instead of words. I'm trying to explain what that would mean. Like, for example, he will say on the pasuk about Yishmael, it says, Va'al charbucha techyeh, v'chein ki lo al alechem levado yechyeh ha'adam belechem. He will refer to other verses and sometimes even blend that in with his style of speech. It's like speaking in rhyme or speaking in code or reference. So Rabbi Chevelle will decode all these different references that you'll get in the Ramban, which is pretty amazing. But it also makes it challenging sometimes to understand, well, what does he mean when he's using that reference? So the Ramban, he was a paitan. He wrote piyutim, he wrote songs. He gave drushas. We have several drushas in the Chevelle edition. He gave drushas in Barcelona, in Girona. It was a famous drusha that's published the Ramban on Rosh Hashanah. It looks like that drusha must have taken 5-6 hours to deliver. So he must have had quite a core balabatim. He must have had quite a group. It's many, many pages, the Ramban's drusha on Rosh Hashanah. The Ramban was a parshan, so he wrote a commentary on the Talmud. He wrote a commentary later in life, which we'll get to hopefully very soon, on the Chumash. He also wrote halachic works. Couldn't trace him. He wrote it's called the Dina de Garmi. He wrote what's very important for medical halacha. He wrote a book about all things end of life. Bikur Cholim, Nicham Avelim, the halachas of Goses, the halachas of treatment of end of life. The Ramban wrote several important machshavas svarim, Shahar Gemul. So the Ramban pretty much covered everything. He also did write responsa, and he wrote glosses. The Ramban, we mentioned, he was right near Provence, so there was a very important Provençal scholar whose name was Rav Zrachia Halevi, who lived in Narbonne. And he and the Ramban
let's just say they didn't say eye to eye. Let's just say that. So they had an exchange of letters, which were pretty intense, and they had the Ramban wrote a super commentary, because the Rabbi Zerach HaLevi, who lived in Narbonne, wrote a commentary, a glosses on the Rif. Rav Yitzchak Alfasi, they were mentioned, was the original Sephardic, one of the most important Sephardic figures, Sigismund, from the 11th century. So he, in Narbonne, is writing now, in the 13th century, late 12th century, glosses on that. So the Ramban comes and he writes what he calls the Book of Melchemes Hashem, the War of God. You don't want to get in front of the Ramban who's writing the War of God. So he writes an incredible introduction, which we mentioned last week, in a humble introduction that he doesn't say that every proof that he brings is like a drop bomb, you know, drop dead proof, absolute knockout punch against the Baal HaMor. But anytime the Baal HaMor starts up again, aggravating the Rif, so the Ramban comes and smashes him to pieces, the 1,000 pieces. Anyway, so the last point is that the Ramban was also a very important Kabbalist. And that's something that you also find in his Pirush on Chumash and other places called Al Derech HaEmes. When you see the Ramban says something is Al Derech HaEmet, it's the way of truth. That truth is Chachmei HaKabbalah, the wisdom of the Kabbalists. So Ramban is a very, very big person. But that's not the only reason that the Ramban is one of my heroes. Because in 1263, now toward the end of his life, so the Christians have dominated not just the northern crust of Spain, but also they're pushing further south now in Barcelona. They're very, very active. The Dominicans, the Dominicans and the Franciscans, and they're out there trying to convert Jews and persecute Jews, and there were many public disputations. So in 1263, King James of Aragon is one of these areas right in Catalonia is in the north, and Aragon's a little bit to the south and the west. I've never been to Spain, but if I went to Spain, I would probably check out some of these places. I don't know what there's left in here. If you go to Aragon, you'll find King James of Aragon in 1263, who calls a debate between the Ramban, who's going to represent all the Jews of Spain, and an apostate known as Pablo Cristiani. The Ramban refers to him as Fray Paul, and the Ramban disputes him over several appearances in front of King James, and he wins the disputation defending Judaism against Christianity. At this point,
what
the Ramban...
Mean?
So his arguments, even the king acknowledges that the arguments of the Ramban are more convincing than those of Pablo Cristiani. At this point, the Ramban is okay, everything is fine. Well, then, the Ramban writes an account of this debate, and he published it, and Rabbi Chevelle, Dr. Chevelle, he has a critical edition of this called the Vikuach HaRamban. Well, after he published this, that's when they got mad. So they came after him, and he was sentenced to death for publishing the Sefer Vikuach HaRamban. And they did him a favor after some political shenanigans. They commuted his sentence. Now he's, whatever, you know, 70 years old. They say it's no problem. All you have to do is be expelled from the Spanish kingdom. So, yes?
They paid for him.
Yeah, they paid for him. They commuted his sentence because old-fashioned, sometimes you got to do what you got to do. So the Ramban leaves his entire family at an advanced age, and he travels to Israel. Amazing. So not only is he an incredible halachist, he's a Kabbalist, he's a Mefarish, he's writing piyutim, he's also a public speaker, he's giving drushas, he stands up for the Jewish community, and then he is a very big Ohev Tzion. So where is he going to go? So he's going to go to Israel all by himself. He arrives in the summer of 1267. Summer of 1267, Ramban arrives in Israel. He gets to Yerushalayim for the first time on the 9th of Elul in 1267. How do we know this? Because Dr. Chevelle has a published letter from the Ramban to his son Nachman, who is this person in the green here. This is the son of the Ramban. Oh, here's a packet if somebody else needs it. He writes a letter to him. He says, I get to Yerushalayim and there's nobody here. Because I think 1244 it had been sacked by the Mamluks or whoever it was. Every 10 minutes, Yerushalayim was being destroyed by somebody else. So in 1244, I think it was the Mamluks who had destroyed the city. And he says, we can't even get a minion. We have to call two painters. We have to chop a couple of people together and make a little minion over here. So that's the origins of what we call today the Ramban Shul. Because the Ramban establishes a minyan in Yerushalayim. The Chiddush was they didn't have a minyan in Yerushalayim. They had to get people from Yericho, from other places in the area. There were Jews living in Israel, but Yerushalayim was largely desolate. He says, the Kafi HaKdusha Kach HaShemama. The more holy the place is here, the more it's destroyed. Remember, first the Crusaders had taken it in 1099, and they destroyed what was there. Then the next people, so it was constantly in a state of disrepair. So Ramban reestablishes a minyan, so the tradition is that this shul, which is, maybe it didn't come out so well on the Xerox copy, but that was the background of the cover, of cover page, is the modern day furniture. You see the back kind of the Ramban shul. So those who go to the old city of Yerushalayim, you will see there the Ramban shul. The reason it's called the Ramban shul is from this story, because the Ramban acknowledges that there was no minyan. He tried to get a minyan. Ramban then left Yerushalayim and went to settle in Akko. He died in Akko, and in the 1970s, if you look back on the map page, in Akko, I think it was 72 or 76, some archaeologists came upon this seal of the Ramban Moshe ben Reb Nachman of Gironi Chazak. It was found in Akko in the 1970s. What a life. What a life. If that isn't heroic, I don't know what is. So the Ramban, when he was still living in when he was still living in Spain, he began writing a commentary on the Chumash. And he concluded this commentary on the Chumash only when he got to Eretz Yisrael. And there are several places in the commentary where he references, where he makes it clear that he is in Eretz Yisrael when he writes this commentary. For example, where is Kever Rachel? Well, it says in the Pasuk, Ba'od Kivras Eretz Lavo Ephrasa. Well, I don't know what the word Kivras Eretz means. The word Kivras Eretz, that phrase, does not appear, generally. It's not a common phrase, Kivras. So Rashi quotes some earlier grammarians we mentioned before, the classic grammarians, Menachem and Donash. They're trying to figure out what it is. And they're trying to figure out, is it far? Where Rachel is, is it far to Ephrat? Or not far from Ephrat. Ba'ud Kivras Eretz Lavo Ephrasa. So Ramban says, I'll tell you, I was there. It's not far. Kivras Eretz cannot be a far distance, because I was there. He says it's just a few minutes by way, you know, you walk one day. You go from Kever Rachel, you get to Ephrat. So this component and other components, if the scholar, someone, Rabbi Kraft told me that he took a course with Rabbi Hurwitz, Dr. Hurwitz in Revel, where Dr. Hurwitz went through systematically the Pirush on the Ramban, figuring out which components, or as he could, which components, which pieces were written when he got to Eretz Yisrael. Because some of them you could tell. Obviously, that's a good example of where Rashi, he lived in Troyes in France, he never saw Eretz Yisrael, so he couldn't know for sure what Kivras Haaretz meant, except by circumscription. So the Ramban says, he says, I was there. So what I'd like to share in the next few minutes is this couple of snippets of the Ramban's, Nachmanides' introduction to his Pirush on Chumash. The Ramban, as we mentioned, obviously is a great intellectual giant. Nonetheless, when I told my mother-in-law last week that I was going to be discussing the Ramban, my mother-in-law knows a lot more Ramban than I do. I don't study Ramban a la Torah regularly. So she has taught, I think, probably every angle of every Chumash. So she has extensive knowledge in Ramban. So she pointed out to me that she's one of the things that is most striking to her about the Ramban's Pirush on Chumash is that despite the Ramban's great genius and his very often his innovative approach to things, he always shows great deference to the Chazal. Even though he might think this approach is the most compelling, but he will always share his deference, perhaps even as the last word, in terms of giving the appropriate respect to the great rabbis of the Talmud, of the sages before him. That also is the mark of a great person. So we begin Moshe Rabbeinu, Kosav HaSefer HaZeh. Says the Ramban, I'm on page one of the introduction. I'm not going to do the whole thing, we'll just do a couple of snippets so we get a little taste. Moshe Rabbeinu wrote his book. Ramban dies in 1270. But before he dies, remember, he spends 3 years in Israel. This is where he finishes it up. So I don't know when he wrote this introduction, whether he wrote it while he was still in Spain or when he wrote it when he got to Israel. He says, Moshe Rabbeinu Kosav HaSefer HaZeh. He says, you have to know that Moshe Rabbeinu, he wrote this book. Im HaTorah Kula, with the whole Torah. Mipiv Shel HaKadosh Baruch Hu. From the mouth, dictated absolutely by God. There could be no doubt about that. So how was the Torah written? He says, you're going to open this book, you got to know, where does it come from? V'hakarov, And what's most likely? Shekosvo Bahar Sinai. He wrote it at Har Sinai. Kisham, there, Ne'emar, it says, lo, to him, Ale Eli Hahara Veheyesham. Come to the mountain, up to the mountain, and be there. Ve'etano Lecha, says Hashem, es luchos se'even, v'hatorah v'hamitzvah asher kosavti lohorosam. So what is it that he's getting? He's getting the luchos, the Torah, and the mitzvah. What are those three things? Ki aluchos se'even, yichlol haluchos. That will be, literally, the tablets. V'hamichtav, what's the writing? That means the writing on the tablets, that's Aseres Adibros. V'hamitzvah, and the mitzvah, that's mispar ha-mitzvos kulam asiv lo sase. So you're going to get all the mitzvos. The Ramban's opinion is, Ramban says Moshe got all the mitzvos at Sinai. Nothing is not going to be given. All the mitzvos are given to him at Sinai. Imkein, what does it mean when it says v'hatorah? Yichlol ha-sipurim, that's the narrative section. Mitchilas Bereshis, from the beginning of Bereshis. So here's the question. Why do you call the Torah the story part? Why is that called the Torah? It says, I'll tell you why. Because kihumore ha-anashim baderech be'inyan ha-emuna. That guides us, especially in the ways of belief, in the ways of faith. The word Torah, what does it mean, lohoros? To teach, but most specifically, a moreh is a guide, right? A moreh derech is someone who gives you guidance along the way. That's what a moreh derech is. So the Torah, it's not, notice how the Ramban says that the primary word Torah does not mean law. It means guide. So many times we have this warped sense that the Torah is just a bunch of regulations. It's not. It's so much more than that. Primarily, it's a way to live your life. And what is the core of that? What does the Gemara say in the end of Makos? Hemiran al-achas, tzadik be'emunoso yichya. If we have the real presence of Hashem in our lives in a deep way, on a regular basis, that will guide us. So our problem is, my problem is that sometimes, why am I in a bad mood? Why am I in a bad spot? Because I don't feel adequately the Ribono Shel Olam right there. You don't have that level of emuna, that presence of Hashem. But that's what the Torah is really about. The rest of it is the Torah, including the mitzvahs. Says the Ramban, now, it's not finished there. Uberitato min ahar, then he comes down from the mountain, and Rabbi Shevel, Zichron Levracha, points out that this means the last time, on Yom Kippur, when he comes down finally, because remember, he went up on the mountain, smashed the luchos when he came down the first time. Then he has to go back and get forgiveness, then he comes down the next time, and he gets the second set of luchos. When he gets that, kosav mitchilas ha-Torah ad sof sipur ha-mishkan. Then he wrote until the sipur of the mishkan means, as Rabbi Shevel points out, the commandment of the mishkan. That's what he writes when he comes down, because remember, it's not so clear. What does it mean that we have a Mishkan? What's the significance of that? So that's another Machlokas Rashi and the Ramban, but Rabbi Shevel is pointing out that at this point, when he comes down on Yom Kippur, he's giving them the instructions to build the Mishkan. So now we have the history of the development of the Torah. Moshe got all the mitzvahs, he got the actual luchos, and he got the story part, and then he got the section until now about building the Mishkan, telling them about the Mishkan. Well, what about the rest of the story? What about all the travels and everything like that? So he says, Ugmar HaTorah, the rest of the Torah, I'm on the top line, the Xerox copy didn't get a little bit blurry here. Kosa Bishnos Besof Shnas HaArbaim, on the top of page 2, top line of page 2. He wrote the rest of the Torah at the end of the 40th year. Kaasher Amar, as it says in the Chumash, Hashem says to him, Lokoach es Sefer HaTorah hazeh, take this Sefer Torah, v'samtim oso mitzar aron bris Hashem Elokechem. Put it next to the Aron. This is something that Rabbi Engel spoke about, I think it was last year, Shavuos, about the writing of the Torah. V'zeh k'divrei ha'omer, Torah Megillah Megillah Nitna. This is according to the opinion, because there is a machlokas. There's a discussion in the Gemara and Gittin. How was the Torah given? So this is one option the Ramban thinks, which he thinks is the more compelling of the two options. If somebody asks you on the street,
really, the Jewish people, you got a book from God. How did that transpire? You know, God's not physical. What does that mean? He gave you a book. What does that mean? How would you explain that to somebody on the L? Like, it's a little strange thing. God doesn't have a hand. I mean, the Bible says he has a hand, but he doesn't have a hand. So how would you explain that? You'd say, well, look, it was, according to this first approach, it was written in phases. First, God gave all the laws and the story until that point at Sinai. And then later, he gave him the rest of the story when it finished at the end of 40 years. That's it. Now, Moshe Rabbeinu, did he tell them all the laws right then and there at Sinai? Maybe yes, maybe no. Right? It sounds like from the Chumash that he told, like Tzitzis, it sounds like he told it to them a little bit after the Meraglim, or it's put there, but the Ramban says, everything was told at Sinai. You're right. It doesn't tell you the mitzvah like Challah. When does the mitzvah of Challah appear? Only after Chayda Meraglim, in Parshas Shalach. But the Ramban says, Challah, got it. Shemitah, got it. Everything, it's all done. It's just the way it's going to be taught, it's going to be in a specific way, and we'll see perhaps one of the reasons why in a minute. But that's the first way. The other way the Ramban says is to say it. The person says, really, I never heard of that. They gave it to him in two parts. The Ramban says the other way is, Aval, I'm on the third line of page 2, L'divrei ha'omer Torah chasuma nitno, according to the one who says that the Torah was given chasum. How do you translate chasum? Seal. Yeah, seal, you know, seal. Exactly, like packaged. You know what I mean? Like a whole thing in one shot. That opinion says, which is the Gemara, Nechtav Hako Bishnas Ha'arba'im. It was all written in the 40th year, as it says in the Pasuk in Shinitztave, Kis V'lachem as Hashira Azos V'lamda Es B'nei Yisrael Sima B'fihem. So that's the history of the Torah. Then the Ramban goes to the style. He says, really, it should have said, God said these things to Moshe. Right? Before Bereshit, it should have said, and Hashem said to Moshe at Sinai, this is what happened at Bereshit. Right? It should have given the introduction. But he says, he did not do that. Why not? It's a good question. These are like basic questions that we don't think about because we're so used to learning Torah. We don't step back and think about, well, why was it written in this way? Why is it written in third person? It could have been written in first person. Moshe Rabbeinu could have said, when I was there, like an autobiography type of thing. So Ramban says, I'll tell you why. And this is an important point, he says. In the bracket, where I put the little arrow. Va'atam, and the reason. L'ksiva satora b'loshan hazeh, that it's written in this way. I'm on the, in the page 2, column 1, about 4 lines from the bottom. Mipnei shekodma l'briyas ha'olam. The Torah existed before the world. Obviously, before the birth of Moshe Rabbeinu, as we have a tradition in Kabbalah, which is rooted in Midrashim, but it's a Kabbalistic idea, the Torah came first. It's not a story that came along after the creation of the world. It's not a book of laws that adapts or applies as a response to the reality in which we live. It came before. Now, what does it mean that it was written on black fire and white fire? I have no idea. That's way deep. That's the deep end of the pool. I'm still in the shallow. I don't know what that means. But what it's going to mean in terms of its application is the following, says the Ramban. So, keep reading. Vehine, and therefore, second to last line on the right side. Moshe kim sofer hamatik mi sefer kadmon v'kosev. Moshe Rabbeinu is the equivalent of a copy editor. He's just copying from one page to the next. He had a document before him. It was black fire on white fire. V'lachein kosav stam. Aval ze emes ubaruhu. This is truth and clear. Shekola Torah. Mitchila sefer Bereishis ad la'ini kol Yisrael, from the beginning of Bereishis till the last line, Higia mipiv shal HaKadosh Baruch Hu la'ovno shel Moshe. It came from God to the ear of Moshe. As it says later on, in a different context, but this is a good example of how the Ramban uses an intertextual approach. He's stealing now a pasuk about the man by the name of Baruch, who is a disciple of Yirmiyahu, living hundreds and hundreds of years later, to use an example, he says, "Mipiv yikra Elias called for Emoile, vani kosev ala sefer b'dio." He's reading, and I'm writing. Moshe's writing, Hashem is reading. Hodio, He told him first, Inyan, Tchila, Inyan, Bria, Shamayim, Va'aretz, V'chol, Tzva'am. He taught Moshe first the story of creation. What does that mean? Kolomar, Brias, Kol, Nivra, all creations, Va'atachtonim, and all the things underneath. V'gam, Kain, Kol, HaNe'amar, B'nevuah, Mima'aseh, Merkava, all the spiritual, celestial realms. U'maisa, Bereishis, and the creation of the world. V'amekubal, Bohem, L'chachamim, Im Toldas, Arba, HaKochos. He's going to tell Moshe all of the source of the four strata of life. And now I'm going to understand this in light of what he said before. See, if you're going to tell me that the Torah comes along after the creation of the world, so then the Torah knows until where the Ribbono Shel Olam will educate it. But if the Torah predates all of existence, so that means that all of existence will stem from, will be found somewhere in the Torah. And that's what he explains now. Don't think that the Torah is lacking. He tells him, Koach ha-machtzavim. Machtzavim literally means, like a machtzav in Israel would be a quarry. That means inanimate objects. Koach tzimchei ha-adama. Flora. Nefesh ha-tenu'ah. Living organisms, meaning moving. Fauna. V'nefesh ha-medaber. And the speaking, that's the human beings. Bekulam nemer l'Moshe Rabbeinu. Moshe Rabbeinu at Sinai, he knew all of the secrets of life, every single aspect. And the Ramban goes on to explain, there are what he calls 50 sha'arim, 50 gates of wisdom. Moshe Rabbeinu knew 49 of those 50. What's the 50th gate? So he suggests that might be the wisdom of God himself, which is not possible for a human being to understand. I don't even know what it means to say the wisdom of God himself. But now I can understand something, that if you were Moshe Rabbeinu, you didn't need to go to a biology lecture in college, because you knew biology from the Chumash. What do I mean from the Chumash? It doesn't say, but incorporating the Torah is the reality of all of life. So you'll know all of the processes that are involved in physics, chemistry, biology, anything that has to do with life, anything that exists, is rooted in the Torah that pre-existed. So there are some great Gedolim who they just spent so much time studying Torah that they could have followed any profession that they would have chosen. And the more spiritually attuned they were to the Torah, they would have gone even further and further. We're so far from that. But it's known that the Vilna Gaon was an expert in mathematics. He was an expert in mathematics from studying Talmud and studying the halachos that are relevant. From there, he was able to understand all of these different aspects. There are many. It's true that the Vilna Gaon did not go to medical school. His father did not want him to go. His father, I think there was some discussion, wanted to go to medical school, didn't want to go to medical school, whatever it is. But the idea, says the Ramban, is it's not that the Torah is something, it's one discipline, and then there are other disciplines. In truth, all the disciplines, all the knowledge in the world is incorporated in the Torah. We just don't see it always like that. So we need to give ourselves a leg up, those of us who want to understand, you know, the reality. Poskim want to talk about shilas of electricity on Shabbos. They need to either themselves go to engineering school, or they need to speak to somebody who's an engineer, because today it's difficult to ascertain the basics of engineering, from at least my experience in studying Gemara. But it fits with the Ramban's understanding, especially a Kabbalistic one, that everything is involved as part of Torah. And here comes the last point that I want to share this morning, and that's the next page on page 3 on the bottom. Says the Ramban, Od yesh biyadenu kabbalah shel emes. And this helps me, because let's say in yesterday's parsha, yesterday? I think it was yesterday. When we learn all the descendants of these various tribesmen of families in the parsha, whose families? First you get Esav's, and you get Yishmael's, and you think to yourself, Ribbono Shel Olam, what do you need this for? What is it significant for? The Torah is an infinitely wise document that every letter, there's not a single extra drop of ink. So what do you need all these things for? You know, it's like the Gemara has a discussion about Ben Sora Omora. Ben Sora Omora, one opinion the Gemara is, Lo Hoya V'lo Nivra. Never was. No two parents who had the same voice and the same look and the same height ever schlepped their child who stole meat and drank wine to a Beis Din that killed him. Gemara says, one opinion, it's never happened. So why is it there? Oh, the Gemara says, I'll tell you why. Drosh v'kabel schar. Learn it and you get schar. So I ask you, Doc, is there a paucity of other things to learn? Would you have felt like, you know, man, I am bored one afternoon because without it, so more, I got nothing else to learn.
Was it ridiculous?
What kind of, what's the Gemara trying to say? So Ramban has a Kabbalistic idea that answers both of these questions. He says, Od yesh b'yadinu Kabbalah shel emes. Kabbalah shel emes means Torah sasod, secret Torah. Ki kol ha-Torah kula shmosav shel HaKadosh Baruch Hu. The entirety of Torah is the names of God. Now look what he says. Shahatevos mischalfos l'shemos b'inyan acher. So, I'll do this very briefly. Imagine I have this. I'm using the back of my board. Here it is. Okay. Says the Ramban, this is what we have. Take this line and run it the whole way. So Ramban says, the way that we break it up, the way that the black fire on white fire was transmitted to Moshe Rabbeinu, is it was broken up in a way for us to interpret it. Which means, he would break it like this. Bereshis, bara, Elohim, ace. But, he says, what if you broke it some other way? What if you broke it like this? Bara, Shizbara, Shizba, Rel, Ohimes. So, to us, that would be gibberish. But says the Ramban, if you use the secret spiritual meaning of the Torah, that may be a series of the names of God. I hope it's not, because if I said it, I might be in big trouble. But I'm just making that up for example. He says, you take the whole entirety of the Torah and you string it out on one long string. So you're right, we're going to read the end, let's say, Parshas Vayishlach. This guy and this one has Ada and Sila and all these women, all these names, chiefs, you know, you don't know what it's talking about. So I read those psukim. So you try to get as much of the pshat out as you can. And the Mefarshim explain. But on the deepest level, if you strung it all out, there's some manifestation of God. Now, the name of God is more than just a name. Obviously, it means a way to express something. Similarly, if you put this whole long name and you didn't have the section about, let's say, Ben Soru More, or Irani Dachas, which other the other opinion of the Gemara and Sanhedrin didn't happen. So let's say you would have letters missing from the name. So maybe that's why, that's Rav Schechter once said in Shir, that's why you need those sections. Drosh v'kabal schar means the whole complete picture of godliness would not be complete even if you hadn't had that. If you didn't have that, I mean. Which means, by the way, you're right. It could be that nobody ever stoned their kid for stealing meat and drinking wine. But that's part of, and even if it's not necessarily on a conscious level in terms of our understanding, obviously there are lessons to be learned of raising children and social norms and other things. But the idea of the Ramban is that you should see every letter as important. And then this causes, actually, a very big debate in the halacha, because the Shagas Aryeh, the great genius of Eilat Ginsberg of the 18th century, he lived in Metz as a very, very old man. But primarily he lived in, I think in Lithuania, in some not far from Vilna. It was like a stone throw from the Vilna Gaon. He was so poor, he used to learn at moonlight because he couldn't afford candles, the Shagas Aryeh. And then he was 70 years old, and he heard that the Rabbanus in Metz was a very, very prominent city in the edge of France and Germany, was coming looking for a Rav. So he applied. So they sent a group of people to come check him out for like a Prava, and they come, they knock on the door, they see a 70-year-old man there. They're like, no disrespect, but we're looking for a community rabbi, not somebody who tomorrow is going to be in the Olam Emes. He said, don't worry, how long do you expect to hire a rabbi for? They said, 20 years. He says, 20 years? I could do 20 years. He died when he was 90 years old, after 20 years as the rabbi of Metz. Now, who did I hear that from? I heard that from Rabbi Dr. Meyer Hershkowitz at Zatzal, who was my grandfather's friend, who was an old professor who died at the age of 91, who told me, always have a project in learning. As long as you tell the Rebbe Shalom you got something to do, Hopefully, I'll let you finish it. Anyway, so the Shagas Aryeh cites this discussion, and he published 5 Sfarim, Dr. Rosh Glitzel. So the Shagas Aryeh has a discussion. He actually poses a very important question, which is, it could be, based on this teaching of the Ramban, that every single letter is essential for the Torah. Well, what about those vavs, like Aharon? How do you spell Aharon? With a vav or without a vav? I don't know. Well, there's a tradition how it's supposed to be spelled. This thing's called mole and chaser, extra, not extra, but words that have vavs and words that don't have vavs. So the Shagas Aryeh has a suggestion. He thinks that perhaps today one cannot fulfill the mitzvah de oraisa of ksiva sefer Torah, because the Gemara says that we are not experts in which letters get vavs. Interesting. So now, later in the 18th century, I'm sorry, in the 19th century, Rav Yosef Babad of Galicia, he comes along, his sefer is called the Minchas Chinuch. He says, it's not true. I don't believe, he says, that it could be that, God forbid, a whole mitzvah of the Torah would disappear. He thinks that those vavs are not essential in terms of the understanding of the Torah, and therefore they are not going to ruin the puzzle of sefer Torah. But let's say you have a letter that's missing. Let's say you're missing the, the Lamed in Elohim. Obviously, that disqualifies your Sefer Torah. But the Minchas Chinuch does reference this Ramban, because it sounds like from the Ramban that if you have a Torah that's missing a single letter, it's missing from the name of God. The whole thing is not going to be complete. So this is a little bit of a tricky topic. But then it's discussed in the Poskim whether, either way, we're going to try to write as many Sefer Torah as we can. It's a beautiful mitzvah. But the notion that, according to the Ramban, the whole Torah is one expression of God, gives meaning to every single letter. So just to summarize, we spoke a little bit about the historical context in which the Ramban lived, some of his teachers and his students, the great revolution that the Ramban created in Talmudic study, and then we shared just a couple of tiny little pieces from his introduction in terms of how he saw the Chumash, especially from the vantage point of a Parshan, but also a Kabbalist, who saw the spiritual dimension of Torah, that even though we read the Psukim, we should be thinking Eish Chor Al Gabe Eish Levon, a black fire on white fire that's going to be manifest in this way. So I hope everybody learned something, and has a great week. Shkoyach, thank you for coming.